This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to www.accessradiotaranaki.com.
Welcome to Wahine Atua, a space made for and by women in Taranaki. Whether you're tuning in at home, work, or with a cuppa in hand, you're in great company. Join us now for chats, laughter, real korero, and a whole lot of wahine power. It's Wahine Atua, on now here at Access Radio Taranaki.
Welcome along to Wahine Atua for another week. And of course, this week I have the lovely Fee and Marcia joining me. Thanks, ladies.
Kia ora.
Hello again.
We were saying beforehand about how our week's been and how the weekend's been and what did you get up to. And I was saying I was with sick grandkids. And we all know what that's like. It's not much fun to have sick kids or sick people in the house or sick animals or... Yeah, at least the grandkids didn't cost me thousands of dollars like the dog did, but that's always a bone. But it's probably yet to come. But the person who knows all about having kids and how it will be when you've got sick kids is Amanda and Clinton Godies. Amanda, thank you for joining us today.
Kia ora, pleasure. Good to be here.
It's lovely you're here. We were just saying off air about how Amanda and I first met, and it was through doing New Plymouth Operatic Society's production of Les Mis, because Justin was in it, of course, as the chaplain. And oh my god, that husband of yours can sing. He could sing all day to me.
He sure can.
And he gives the best hugs. I've got to say that he does. He gives the best hugs.
It's a special challenge.
Yeah, really beautiful, beautiful hugs. He does. Yeah. And it's hard to believe that Les Mis was all those years ago, because it's crazy. Crazy.
2018, was it?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
No, not that long.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. Is it really? Wow.
Yeah. I've got the t-shirt to prove it. Alarming, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just bizarre to think it was. I think the thing which shocks me is when I see those little girls who played at Young Corset and they're now at uni this year. And I'm like, what the hell? I went to the, like, and went and bought them little wee girly bracelets from me, because I shared a dressing room with those girls. And I remember, like, going to, like, finding little children's size. And here they are, adults, and they're at uni. And it's like, no, how did that happen? No.
Like we've said before, Tracy, the kids get older, but we don't age.
No, we don't.
That's right. No.
We don't. We don't. Hey, Marcy, I'm going to hand the floor to you. You're going to have a chat to us today about what we're talking about. So off you go, honey.
Well, we started this conversation off air after our last podcast when we were discussing what topic should we do next. And I'd seen something earlier that day around pay parity on Facebook. And it was an article that Amanda had posted and commented on. And so pay equity, pay parity. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm into that. We need some of that. Well, actually, is it? Mm. And we were just speaking off air about the difference between pay equity and pay equality, equal pay and pay equity. What's the difference? And I hadn't really understood that. So we thought we'd invite Amanda along because she's far more articulate in this than we are with a legal background. So I think we'd tie ourselves up in knots if we tried to explain it.
Brilliant.
So welcome, Amanda.
Thank you.
You know, could you just give us a basic overview about what this Equal Pay Amendment Act from last year was all about?
Yeah, sure. And I'll try not to tie myself up in knots doing it either. It does get a little bit complicated.
We will ask questions if we don't understand, don't worry.
Perfect. All right. I'll do a whistle stop tour and then you stop me and ask questions, or we can dig into some more detail later. So you're right. Pay equity and pay equality are two slightly different things. So pay equality is a pretty familiar concept for people, in that if two people are doing exactly the same job, they should be paid the same. So if a man and a woman doing the same job then they need to be paid the same. We had a law that passed in 1972 that said that was the case.
That's a long time ago.
It is quite a long time ago now, yeah.
Quite forward thinking for the time, I would imagine.
Probably was, yeah. And it, it just because the law was passed doesn't mean it's always followed. So there was quite a lot of battling of people to make sure that they were getting equal pay. Part of that is even knowing what your colleagues are paid in the first place, which in some workplaces you're not even allowed to ask. So there's a bunch of there's been a bunch of barriers to actually making that happen. And we can dive into some more of those later too, because there's all kinds of unconscious bias and all sorts of things that go on when salaries are set. But so pay equality is the idea that a man and a woman doing the same job should get paid the same. Pay equity. Now, see, I am getting myself tangled
Yeah,
up in that.
smart though, far
Pay
out.
equity. Pay equality, same job, same pay. Pay equity is where you have professions or jobs that are female dominated, which as a sector get paid systematically less than an equivalent-ish male dominated profession.
Oh,
So,
right.
say, for example, builders being compared to aged care workers.
Right,
It
okay.
take about the same amount of skill, training, etc., but on average across the professions, builders are paid much more than aged care workers are. So, the idea being that because it's a female-dominated profession or a work female-dominated workplace, the whole sector or that job is devalued and earns less than the male equivalent.
And they
So that
still
pay
hear
equity.
phrases like, I've still heard it, people saying, well, a care worker or a teacher, classroom assistant, well, it's a secondary income because the main income is the male income.
What?
And it makes, well, it would make all our bloods boil.
Absolutely. I was saying to the you guys beforehand off air, I know this is not to do with equity. I'm going to get confused now, equity, but as far as pay equality, I find this really fascinating because I myself, as I was saying to you, have been in a position where a male who was doing a job that I stepped in to do beforehand with less experience than what I did. Both of us were, it was a restructure. Both of us had to apply for a job. I was successful and found out afterwards that actually he was paid tens upon thousands and thousands of dollars more than what I was. And yet I was the successful one. So they employed me over him, but I still was paid. I'm talking over $50,000 a year less than what he was offered, what he was on actually, because he stayed on, but what he was actually on for a lesser role, I was paid that amount less. And I infuriates the shit out of me, pardon my language, but it does, because how many other women are experiencing that, and how many other women are like me? Because I literally can remember sitting there thinking, just shut up, you need this job, you're a sole parent, just suck it up. I can remember feeling like that, being hurt, but then going to myself, suck it up, don't rock the boat. It's a very fickle industry. You'll be see you later, bye if you say anything. And it's and how many other women go through that? You know, like there must be others. There must be others.
Lots, lots. I used to work as a woman in engineering advisor at the University of Auckland, specifically working to encourage more women into the profession and supporting women who are in there. And it happens a lot, and there's a lot of structural bias against it, where women feel that they're not able to speak up and ask for what they actually deserve or what they're actually worth, with good reason, because it's the research shows that as women do that, you're often not necessarily thanked for doing it.
I'm just looking at this, the summary of the article that you referred to last week, and I read that the new act wiped out 33 active claims. From female-dominated workforces.
Yeah, that's right. So, jumping back again, So we talked about the 1972 Act, which set up pay equality. Then in 2020, the Labor League government established a pay equity scheme so that there was a system for comparing female-dominated industries with male-dominated industries and making sure that those female-dominated industries were paid what they were actually worth and what they deserved. I think there have already been a number of claims already settled, actually. But there were 33 active claims still to go. And without any consultation whatsoever, last year, the current government basically changed the law overnight, to cancel all of those active claims, to make the threshold for actually gaining pay equality much higher,
Oh, God.
and said to all of those industries, all of those workers who'd been battling, in many cases, actually for decades to get paid what they were worth, said, you're going to have to go back to the drawing board, start your claim again. And by the way, the threshold's now higher. So we've moved the goalposts and made it harder for you. So that, from a legal standpoint, I mean, there's a, yeah, I think from there's an argument for sure about women needing to be paid what we deserve anyway. But from a legal standpoint and a rule of law standpoint, those process issues are really problematic because standard practice says that under the rule of law, if people already have active claims, if they've already started going through the process under law, you can't retrospectively remove those rights. And that's exactly what the government did for 33 active claims. But you're talking like hundreds of thousands of people, you know, people who have
It's not
been.
33 individuals, is it? It's 33 groups of people.
Industries. Including early childhood education, primary and secondary teachers, aged care workers, librarians. I won't rattle
The
off
list
all
goes on.
33, but one in particular, the teachers, is quite an interesting case because the threshold that it used to be under the law in 2020 was that to be a female-dominated profession, the threshold was around 60% of the workforce had to be female. What the 2025 Act did was increase that threshold to 70%, and it has to have been at 70% for the last 10 years. Right? So if like for the last for 8 years it was at 71%, and then in the ninth year it dropped to 68 and then came back up, that means that you're no longer eligible. The profession's no longer eligible. And really, so that's really problematic for teaching because at a few times over the last 10 years, it's just dipped below 70%.
So
So we're talking
somebody's
like
had a really good
68,
look at the
60.
stats,
Oh,
haven't they?
someone's had a very, yeah, exactly. Someone's had a very good look at the stats and gone, how can we make sure that we're not on the hook for paying these women what they're actually worth?
So in one respect, somebody's done some due diligence and thought, how can we save money by excluding all these people?
Sure.
But hell, that's not fair.
No, it's really not
So
fair. And I mean, so.
I'm thinking back, knowing, having worked across the not-for-profit sector and particularly social services over the last few years in Taranaki, I remember the social workers getting pay equity, and nursing carers, I think I seem to remember that coming in. And I do remember at the time some of the organisations that I was working with and supporting, it was a big concern for them because it had an impact on their salary bills. However, what they've seen is staff retention, is that they've got people who are staying because they're not feeling undervalued because they're not paid right and they're not chasing the dollar. Well, not necessarily chasing the dollar, but if you're doing a job as a social worker in an NGO, or paying you significantly less than Oranga Tamariki, then a job come up, then why wouldn't you look to move? But if you can get that same salary in an environment that you prefer, then surely that's fair, yeah?
Yeah,
And that's
absolutely.
what
And
we're
I
wanting
think,
for everybody, eh?
yeah, that's right. I mean, one of the arguments has been, oh, well, pay equity is actually going through a fair and robust pay equity process would be too expensive. But I think the response to that is, well, but what's the cost if you don't and if we
Yeah.
don't? And what messages are we sending? And particularly as cost of living is increasing for everyone, those professions who workforces that are really low paid and dominated by women are often those are the industries that actually keep the world running,
Absolutely. God, yeah.
those people who are looking after our sick people, our older people, our babies. One of the active claims was Plunket nurses. Plunket nurses have now had their claim cancelled and have to start all over again. It's crucial work, and I think we need to figure out a way to make it happen. And as you say, that retention in not just in workplaces but actually in professions overall. Because again, these are professions and jobs where there's more and more demand, and we actually need more people joining them, not more people dropping out because they can't afford to stay.
I mean, I guess
It's
in a
the best
time when
example.
there's more full employment, people might jump from a quali from a profession because they might get more money earning elsewhere, and then you lose. I mean, I'm just again, I'm fixated on social workers at the moment because we were losing social workers hand over fist because they could get work elsewhere and be paid more.
But a lot of these professions as well, like if you think of teaching, I come from a teaching background in my family, there's a lot of them, so there's a lot of robust discussions through life. Is that there aren't enough male role modeling, and because of our societal breakdowns as well, if we don't have that pay parity within like teaching, we're not attracting enough men, which is then compounding those sort of issues if there's not, for example, men at home that are good role modeling. I'm not saying that all men at home aren't good role models, and you don't write in. But if we can't attract men because by the mere fact of not having pay parity, then society loses out.
Yeah, that's a whole different perspective, which is really important, too.
Yeah, because it's not just about the money. We've got to look long term, not just short term, unfortunately. And but from 1972, you'd think we would have got our act together, but
And it's even just from with my lens of immigration, when I moved here, I was speaking to another British immigrant who was a teacher. And she's left the teaching profession here because the pay was so much less than what she'd been earning in the UK. She actually found work in other NGOs that paid her more than classroom teaching. She was surprised how, because primary teaching and secondary teaching, there used to be a big gap between that pay equity from my friends and family that I know in teaching back in, I'm talking from a UK perspective. And
Was
I
like
asked her about
it
that
here.
here, and she's like, yeah, it's the same here, but primary teaching, the pay is not great. And honestly, oh, I think they deserve a medal, a gold medal the size of a dustbin lid every Friday.
Could you stay in a
Quite
classroom
right.
with 30 children all day?
No.
Oh, oh.
I struggle being in pack and save if there's half a dozen.
You're right, though. It is like that, though. It is exactly like that. And that's the frightening thing about it is that what gets me is if a law was passed in 1972, whenever it was passed, how can they, when it came to pay equality, though, I'm talking about here, but how can they be allowed to get away with this? If there was a law that was passed, and how did they get away with doing that shit? How did they get away with it? Is it because we don't say anything, speak out? Is that what it is in the first instance?
Were there no
You mean?
successful challenges? Because that's 54 years ago, 1972.
Really?
The 80s were only 20 years ago, but hey, 1972 was 54 years ago.
But it does, it makes you wonder why, well, how do they get away with that? And if they could get away with that for 50 odd years, are they going to get away with this next thing with equity? Is that going to be the next thing that they're going to get away with for the next 50 odd years and keep on pushing and moving the goalposts? You know, that's what intimidates the shit out of me, because I think I've got daughters, and I think, God, you know, and for future generations, are women in the next 50 years going to be facing this crap unless somebody draws a line in the sand and says, look, stop, this is wrong, you know?
So what did the select committee find, Amanda? What when they actually had a look at this, the way that things have been done? I mean,
Yeah, so
I
the
see the
people.
headline of flagrant and significant abuse of power. What
What a
does that
great
mean?
line. Flagrant and significant abuse of power. So what happened for those who haven't kind of been close to it? Because the government passed the new legislation under urgency, it meant that there was no select committee process, there was no consultation with workers, with the general public, with unions.
No.
In fact, there wasn't even any consultation with the Ministry for Women.
It's funny that.
And so when it was announced, Dame Marilyn Waring, who was the youngest MP, I think, ever to join the House, she was about 6 months younger than Chloe Swarbrick when she joined, but decades before, obviously, she decided, I'm not having this. I'm going to convene a people's select committee, and she rounded up 10 former MPs from across the political spectrum to have a look at how the law was passed, what the law changes were, and to hear the general public on what their thoughts were, just like a select committee would have and should have.
Some big hitters on there. I'm just looking at a picture of a
Oh
few of
yeah,
them
it's
there,
pretty
and
serious. Yeah, some really heavy hitters, and again across the political spectrum, all women. And they basically found that the process was really poor, that it shouldn't have been passed under urgency. It shouldn't have been done with no consultation. Shouldn't really have been done at all, but certainly not in the way that it was. And that it significantly raises the bar for if any workers or professions being able to successfully claim pay equity. It basically rolls back the clock a couple of decades, at least.
At least.
And so they've recommended to the government that they repeal the 2025 legislation, go back to effectively the 2020 Act that the Labor League government put in, and that they do, if they are going to carry out any changes, that they do it with full consultation.
Which is that not my understanding of, well, I told you earlier on, I've been working on the Constitution for the changes to the Incorporated Societies Act. That took nearly 8 years to get the changes through, with all rounds and rounds of community consultation and changes and consultation and changes. We thought it were never going to come in. Yeah, and then something like this is done
Overnight.
overnight without any consultation. That's not democracy to me.
No, neither.
How can they do that? I mean, because yeah, like Marcia, I assumed that there was an actual process, unless, I mean, I know in COVID times they did some stuff, you know, in the public interest and whatever, but what was on fire, you know, to
The
fast track?
budget. The budget is the short answer. So, they were about a week away from, maybe even less than a week away from signing off the budget for 2025, and they wanted to make the books look healthier, essentially. So they said, we'll change the pay equity laws. That means we don't have to have a really large number as a liability on the books. And so we'll cancel it under urgency. And ordinarily, all law changes should go through three readings in the House and a select committee where they get proper scrutiny, both by the public and members of all of the parties in Parliament. But there has been a massively increased amount of urgency used over the last 2 years in the current government. I think it's about twice the amount of urgency, roughly, that's ever been used by a government before.
Crazy. I mean,
There
and
must be some
what?
guidelines around
Yeah.
urgency, surely.
Well, this is interesting because I've been listening a bit to Sir Geoffrey Palmer's just written a book, and which is sitting on my bookshelf actually. It's the next one in line to read. But he's really concerned about, given the increase in amount of urgency, that there aren't actually any proper guidelines, or any guidelines that are there are really just conventions. So people have respected them in the past, and so we've all thought, oh yeah, it's fine, but they're not actually codified into law because New Zealand doesn't have a technical constitution. So any government of the day can essentially do what they want. It's just that in the past they haven't done that as much as is happening currently.
So what can we
Oh,
do?
what a
What can we do? Get the voting,
No.
like the ballot box.
Yeah, ballot box, I think. Yeah, there will be, I'm sure, a lot of campaigning this year, not just by political parties, but on this issue by unions are going to be really activated around pay equity, because I think the only way to change this particular law back would be a change of government. I think it's about being loud and getting heard, really. I mean, if there was enough pressure, potentially this coalition government would roll the law back. I mean, who knows? But I struggle to see a future where that happens.
Crazy. You know,
I
I sit
guess.
here. Sorry, Marcy, I was going to say, do you know how I have in my head hearing the lines, and that is the saying of my bloody oath. And there was Labour MP back, Mabel Howard, back, in the 1940s and 50s, and her involvement when she took women's underwear into Parliament for garment standardisations. I mean, she would be turning in her grave to think that she fought to get women to have a size 12 or a size 14 or 16 to be roughly the same size in New Zealand, to give us an idea of sizing for women, to make women's lives a bit easier. But to hear this, she'd just be rolling in a grave. It's just horrific.
So I guess the thing that we can do is talk about it and learn and understand. I mean, and the half an hour podcast that we
Yeah, we've nearly
chatter
come to
on
the end
is
of.
very, very short. But is having a look, just even understanding the difference between pay equality and pay equity has been a big one for me
Yeah,
today.
same. Exactly. I'm the same too, Marcia.
And you
Same
think,
here.
I can hear all the conversations going about, when the every time when they say, oh, minimum wage has gone up, yeah, oh, it's going to cost employers a fortune. But it's like you said earlier, man, what's the cost if you don't? And I think
Absolutely.
that's what we need to think about, or we need to encourage people to actually think about, is don't think about the bottom line and the dollar, because there's more to cost than money.
Absolutely.
And
Absolutely.
it's
Oh,
about, it's
crazy.
people, eh?
Absolutely. On
One.
that note, we are going to have to wrap it up because we have reached our half hour. But Amanda, thank you so much for coming on today. We've all learnt something, which has been amazing. Thank you so much. And we will see you all back here next week on Wahine Aotearoa.
Thank you, Ka kite.
Thanks for listening to this episode. For more information and others just like this, head along to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.
This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.